The next matter, number 22-1422, United States versus Jean Carlos Aponte Colon. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please introduce herself on the record to begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Jessica Earle from the Public Defender's Office on behalf of Mr. Aponte Colon. May I please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal? You may. Your Honors, the prosecution here was well aware of the nature of Mr. Aponte's offense, his criminal history, and the operation of the guidelines, when in the face of all these factors, it agreed to a joint upward variance on the gun count and a guidelines recommendation on the marijuana count. But this agreed upon variance was not enough. The prosecution, well aware of the district court it was facing, filed a nearly identical sentencing memorandum that has been deployed by the same prosecutorial team to seek higher sentences in this district court. In spite of the fact that the district court does not request a sentencing memorandum, it claims it does this out of its solemn obligation to the court. However, the submission of these improper sentencing memorandums, replete with unreliable internet sources that have no connection to the client, Mr. Aponte, constitutes breach. In fact, the memorandum itself hardly ever mentions the count for which Mr. Aponte was convicted of, which is the possession of the firearm furtherance of marijuana trafficking. The government should not be able to extract benefits from a defendant and then later argue around that bargain by paying lip service to the plea while simultaneously undercutting the plea agreement by supplying the district court with unreliable materials. This court should reverse and remand for specific performance.
Can I ask you, and it's a question related to a question Judge Hamilton asked in an earlier case, but as I understand your argument on the breach of the plea agreement, your arguments are, many of them are specific to this particular judge and what you view as this particular judge's tendencies in past cases. And I'm just wondering if breach of plea agreement analysis can really be something that's judge specific.
In the government's brief, they argue that there's no authority saying we have to tailor our recommendations to a specific district court judge. And we're not saying that, Your Honors, but what the case law teaches us is you have to have prepared for the probable impact of your advocacy. That's what the First Circuit case law has long established. And here, the probable outcome of the advocacy before this district court is by supplying these unreliable materials, is likely that the court will go up. But I will say in the past, this isn't the only district court in this particular district that has done this. This kind of sentencing memorandum has been deployed to past district court judges for the same effect. It just so happens right now that this is the only district court in particular that is facing claims before this appellate court. I think you reasonably can anticipate when you sign a plea agreement with the government that a reasonable outcome would be a neutral, fact-specific recommendation by the government in its sentencing memorandum before the district court. The government is present at all these hearings, Your Honors, in this district. They're well aware of the trends that are going on in the district.
Right, so are you, right?
Exactly, Your Honor.
And so how much value does the government's recommendation even have in front of this judge with these kinds of cases, where it looks like he's got his reasons for using upward variances, a disagreement with that looks like a Kimbrough disagreement to me with gun sentences. What's the big deal?
I understand, and I heard Your Honor's question posed earlier to that effect. The problem that we see in the previous cases Your Honor heard about, particularly Mr. Mojica's case and Mr. Aponte's case, there's always a risk, Your Honor, when we sign a plea agreement for our clients that the district court will not follow the plea agreement. But when you have the government submitting these memorandums that aren't tied to the individual in any way, that is expecting an outcome. There's a risk that the judge will go up regardless, but this is enticing the judge or inducing the judge with these sort of inflammatory murder statistics, homicide statistics, to push the judge even further. And we know, Your Honor, particularly Mr. Aponte's case, the district court is reading these memorandums, the government's memorandums, because when we look to the appendix, we look at the district court rationale after push by defense counsel after objections to the sentence, the district court quotes verbatim, Your Honor, from the government's sentencing memorandum. So yes, the judge may have his own thoughts, but you can't read out of the record the fact that the district court certainly relied on the government's sentencing memorandum in Mr. Aponte's case.
thing that I think is difficult about this case is there was an agreement for an upward variance. So the government is allowed to advocate for the upward variance, and you're saying they advocated too much here, and it ended up with too much of a variance. But again, going back to some of the other questions, what is the correct rule that can be created here? How are we supposed to create a rule that says this is too much, but this is just right? In a case like this, like I said, it's just different since there's an agreement for an upward variance already.
Okay, I think, Your Honor, my answer would be two-part to that question. So to the first thing that we're arguing that the government advocated too much, certainly the parties recommended an upward variance here, and we have no issue with the government submitting information about the case for the client that supports the recommended sentence, and in this case, there was an upward variance, ostensibly a charge bargain plea. But the government cannot submit irrelevant information, Your Honor, about murder or homicide. The government can not supply a wrong legal basis about deterrence or community factors when this court's case law under Flores Machicote said it must be tied to the defendant. And then to the second part, the rule, I don't think this court needs to establish a bright line rule about what the government can or can't say in its sentencing memorandum, because the case law in the circuit is clear and longstanding. Government is held to the high standards of performance, and when they are submitting memorandum, if it is tied to the client and relevant under Flores Machicote, the community factors tied to the defendant, then that could be a reasonable submission, but that is not what we have in Mr. Aponte's case. A quick review of the sentencing memorandum filed here. Mentions the word violence, I think something over 30 times, the word murder 6 times, the word homicide 9. Not once is the drug trafficking or the marijuana count mentioned, except for maybe twice at the beginning when the prosecutor includes the charges he's met with. So this court doesn't need to set a rule for the district courts about exactly what may be included in sentencing memorandums, particularly an upward variance case. The government is free to submit what it deems appropriate to justify that variance. The problem in this case and in the prior case is the submission of these unreliable, unvetted sources to push the district court higher. If Your Honors, I have no more questions.
Do you think it's okay to provide statistics for the sentencing commission?
If Your Honor is referring to the recidivism statistics that the government included, we take issue with that the recidivism, as saying as they apply to Mr. Aponte, that because he is now a firearms convict, he's going to recidivate. The sentencing commission.
That's way too simple, right? I mean, the statistics are looking at a whole population. You can talk about chances, you can talk about statistical likelihoods. Individual, is a district judge prohibited from considering those?
No, I don't think the district judge is prohibited from considering the sentencing commission statistics. Those statistics we do point out in our brief contemplate arrests that don't lead to convictions.
Right, and I understand your point that in an individual case that may not be a reliable indicator of a violation, but nevertheless, that's a common practice in criminal justice statistics on recidivism and overall may have some correlations with the population as a whole.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't take issue so much with the fact that the government submits sentencing commission statistics, but again, under this court's controlling case law, it must be tied to the defendant. And when we see a 12-page memorandum, there is a couple paragraphs about recidivism.
Okay,
that
so
is
how about a 20-page memorandum that goes into more detail as concerns a case that was argued yesterday, but a lot going on this week here in San Juan.
Yes.
On sentencing, and where figures indicated that something like, well, we've got a murder rate in San Juan, in Puerto Rico, it's something like 4 times the national average. 50% of the murders are connected to drug trafficking, and vast majority of those with firearms. If the government lays all those out in every sentencing memorandum, in a gun case with somebody who's got a drug connection, and you've got that here, why is that unreasonable?
In Mr. Aponte's particular case, Your Honor, that was not the connection the government made in its sentencing memorandum. That's not on the record before this court. In general,
it could happen if we remain in that.
If the court, we would request the court remand with specific performance that the government can only recommend within the guidelines what was the agreement.
It doesn't mean an upward variance couldn't happen again with a better record.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is a possibility, of course, on a remand, but again, the court should remand with specific instructions if it's going to remand on the procedural reasonableness of the sentence with specific instructions to the district court, as it's in within this court's broad discretion to impose a sentence within the plea guideline range.
We do have an agreement to an upward variance.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the specific performance would be the 84 months on the 924C count, which again, as I mentioned, is ostensibly a plea charge bargain, and then a guideline range of 10 to 16 months on the marijuana count.
Counsel, can I just bring you back to, you started off, I think, saying the government can't submit irrelevant evidence, can't submit unreliable evidence. I think everybody obviously agrees that unreliable evidence shouldn't be submitted, but whether evidence is relevant or not, I think, can be disputed. So I just want to make sure I understand your argument. Are you suggesting that the government can never submit community statistics evidence, that that's always irrelevant?
No, Your Honor, that's not what we're arguing. And I think this court's case law in Flores Manchico is clear. The government, and that is in the justification of the sentence, but we can read that analysis as to the government submissions. The government can submit community characteristics, but this court has been clear that it must be tied to the individual. And again, if I'm bringing us back to this record, the problem here is that the statistics supplied are irrelevant. Mr. Ponte is not charged with any kind of violence in his past. He has no violence in his past or this current crime. There's no evidence of use of the firearm. There's certainly no murder or homicide. So in this particular instance, the submission of these materials being strongly urged the court to consider them to be unreliable, but they're also relevant because they're not tied to Mr. Aponte's individual charges that he was eventually convicted of.
So you think even accurate background information about the community can't be submitted?
I think that's not the record before this court. In a future case, perhaps, but that's not a sentencing memorandum we've seen from the government in any of the cases that we've heard this morning or in Mr. Aponte's case.
Are you claiming ethnic discrimination in this case?
Your Honor, there is an argument citing the Second Circuit's long line of cases, specifically Vasquez Drew, that a...
Are you claiming there's any intentional discrimination in this case?
No, Your Honor, no. Those cases make clear that there is not any argument on behalf of the defense that the prosecution or the judge has any invidious feelings towards a specific race or ethnicity. It's more that if the impartial passerby were to listen to the sentence and feel that these sentences are being handed out to Puerto Rican men having a tendency for violence, that would automatically require the court to remand. It's whether the reasonable person observing and listening to this sentencing here.
As distinct from just looking at overall community statistics, that would help explain some of that.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, if that's not the record, we don't have the community statistics argument by the court. The judge in this case only made a brief quip about the violence in Puerto Rico, no further discussion about
it. Sounds like you want Judge Sosa to give a longer speech in every sentence in here.
Your Honor, when the court is imposing these massive upward variances, and they are, in this case, from the guideline range of 50 months,
But not that much higher above your recommendation.
No, Your Honor, 20 months above our recommendation. But as this court recently held in Colón Cordero, 9 months is the length of a pregnancy, a school year, and frankly, Judge, any day in prison is above what we signed for. But yes, the problem here is the justification, that goes to our second argument, of the upward variance is woefully inadequate. In particular, Your Honor, if you know, and I know I'm running out of time, but the marijuana count, the judge also upward varied, actually almost more than he did on the firearm count. And there's not a single mention by the government or by the judge as to why the marijuana count is worthy of such a drastic upward variance. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was 9 grams of marijuana that were recovered in the car. So yes, Your Honor, to answer your question most succinctly, we need more justification. This court has been clear time and again that if you're going to go up, you can't just relist the items that were seized or the 3553A factors. You have to explain why.
2.7 kilos.
No, Your Honor. It's 2.7 grams of heroin and 9 grams of marijuana. And as the court is aware, Mr. Holde was a longtime drug addict, so he pled to the marijuana count. And when we do the calculation in the PSR, both drugs are included. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, counsel for the government, please introduce yourself on the record to begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Julia Magonyatis for the United States. Now, this court should affirm Mr. Abonga's sentence, as the prosecutor did not breach the plea agreement and the district court imposed a procedurally reasonable sentence. Now, turning to the first claim of error, a question that has been heard many times in the last three cases, what type of rule this court should apply when evaluating a prosecutor's performance pursuant to a plea agreement. And this circuit's precedent has been clear that there is no magic rule or formula. And this makes sense because each case is its own separate world. So what we need to do is look at the plea agreement, the promises contained therein, and do what this court explained back in the 90s in Canada. See if the prosecutor's performance, the overall conduct, was reasonably consistent with making the promised request as to the opposite. And applying that standard in this case, we can conclude that the defendant here did get the benefit of his bargain and the prosecutor did engage in good faith. When we look here at the plea agreement, what the defendant did, he was originally charged with 6 counts, and he pled guilty to 2, and the plea agreement agreed to dismiss the remaining 4. The gun count to which he pled guilty, the 924C, has an advisory guideline range of 60 months. Notwithstanding, the parties agreed to a 40% variance, an 84-month recommendation, and then the parties agreed that they would request a sentence within the advisory guideline range of 10 to 16 months consecutive for the drug count. Now, after Mr. Aponte filed his sentencing memorandum, which was focused on his mitigating factors and his drug problem, and he himself acknowledged that in his view, the 24-month variance was warranted based on the sheer quantity and quality of the evidence seized on the day of his arrest. And if we look what's in the stipulated facts, there's a page that includes not only the type of firearm, the arsenal of ammunition, and the amount of drug paraphernalia. True, very little quantities were seen, but there was a digital scale, there was different types of ledgers, there were various cell phones, there was over $1,000 in cash, there was a Colombian peso, which gives the inference that this drug trafficking was more than the couple of grams that were seized that day. So you have the defendant's memorandum, which explains why he believes that 84-month sentence is appropriate. And then the government files its sentencing memorandum for the same purpose, explaining in its view why it believed that 84-month sentence was appropriate. Importantly, the plea agreement did not contain any prohibition on the type of advocacy or what the government would refer to. And when you look at the substance of this plea agreement, Your Honor, the sentencing memorandum, on over 6 times, the government was explicit that we are requesting 84 months here for the gun and 16 months for the drugs. It requested it 6 different times on page 41, 44, 49, 51, and 52 of the appendix. And what the government was doing was telling the court, in our view, we're taking all of the 3553A factors because not only did it discuss the offense conduct, it had 5 main portions. It discussed the offense conduct, it discussed the defendant's background, it talked about social context, deterrence, and the need to protect the public. So it took all of the 3553A factors and said, Your Honor, to the district court, we've balanced all of this, and in our recommendation, we've already taken into consideration social context. It's a 24-month variance. We've also taken into consideration deterrence. We've taken into consideration the defendant's background. And this is what we find to be the appropriate sentence. So in this case, context is key. When you have 2 parties agreeing to a 24-month variance, there's no wrongdoing in the government explaining its justification, just as the defendant went to his mitigating factors and explained his justification, and there was no problem. There was no objection for the government explaining why the defense, in its view, felt that that sentence was appropriate.
Let me move view of the breach argument to the review of the sentence and the explanation there.
Yes, Your Honor.
In a number of cases, we've said that just listing the facts of a case make it impossible to tell what the court's rationale was for imposing an upward variance. And that, in turn, it would not be an adequate explanation to just list the factors. And so, if for the moment we take aside the arguments about crime in Puerto Rico and deterrence, the general arguments that happened here, it looks to me like the court really does just list through the facts of the case without further explanation and without further ties to the individual defendant before it. What is your take on that, if you take out those more general arguments?
Okay, Your Honor, our take on that is that the district court, prior to imposing sentence, first examined the defendant's age, education, and employment. It looked at the history and characteristics, his drug consumption, and very importantly here, it mentioned the party's recommendations. And we can't take this in a vacuum, because when you have both parties agreeing that a 24-month variance from a 60-month sentence is appropriate, you have the parties explaining, you have the defense saying that the reason for this variance is because of the sheer amount of evidence that was taken and the quality of evidence. We're talking about 3 extended magazines, drum. The defendant himself is explaining that what was seized that day is worthy of a variance. The government is in agreement. And the district court at the end said, I agree with you both, but I just think more is needed. And so this is where the sentencing is an art and not a science. We have the parties put a qualitative amount of 24 months as appropriate in this specific case, given his criminal history, because obviously in a 924C, the criminal history category doesn't come into play. It's just the mandatory minimum. You have the parties agreeing that 24 is okay, and here the district court specifically says, I hear your recommendation, but for me it's not enough when I balance all of the 3553A factors. And the court specifically said that it identified factors, and in that case it was the same factors that the defense himself has identified when he talked about what was seized that day, and it put special emphasis on the types of ammunition and the types of ammunition that are used in NATO military forces. It was very impressed by that, which is not taken into consideration in a 924C. A 924C is just the gun. And here we have an AK-style rifle, no visible serial number, another issue that the court mentioned, with the laundry list of ammunition and drug paraphernalia, the cash, the ledgers, et cetera, et cetera.
So let me ask you a different question, but I think now I know you're gonna answer this question. Let's say we assume that the court's explanation can be supported for a variance on the firearms charge. What basis is there for finding that the district court's explanation for the upward variance on the marijuana count was sufficient?
Your Honor, I would say that it's precisely the quantum of evidence that was seized at the day too, because when we're looking at
the quantum of evidence, and I thought I understood you to say that the recommendation by both parties that this was a sentence above the guideline range, that from that you could infer that even the defendant understood this to be a serious case.
Yes, Your Honor, but I do want to be clear. Both parties did recommend a guideline sentence. I just do want to clarify that. But when we look at what the court mentioned, was precisely what's in the stipulation of facts. And here, there was gram quantities. But then, when we take a look to see exactly what was taken, putting the gun and the ammunition aside, when quite frankly they do go together because it's a 924C. We're talking about 5 ledgers, 1 brown address book, 2 pocket knives, 3 different cell phones, an iPad, a digital scale, 1 black plastic bag with drug paraphernalia, a rifle bag, a different backpack. Then we talk about more than $1,000 in US currency, 20 Colombian pesos. This is enough for the district court saying that all of this material goes beyond the gram quantity. So the drug trafficking that was at play here goes beyond even the user quantities that we know we have an individual with a drug problem, and that can be clearly inferred from the district court's explanation at the sentencing when he imposed an 8-month variance sentence, because the upper end of the guideline was 16 and he imposed 24. So the record provides a plausible basis, and beyond a plausible basis or inference, we have the district court specifically mentioning all of this drug paraphernalia prior to imposing the upwardly variant sentence in the drug account.
Counsel, can I ask you to address, that this is back to the breach of the plea agreement argument, but to address your opposing counsel's arguments to us about when it is and isn't appropriate for the government to include background community facts in its sentencing memorandum when there's a specific, you know, plea agreement. I'd be curious for your reactions.
Your Honor, considering that the community considerations are part of the 3553A factors and Flores Machico as a part of general deterrence, if the case deals with firearms and the government is bringing firearm statistics, that is completely relevant. Now, the government is cognizant that the community characteristics cannot be the tail while wagging the dog. You cannot impose an upwardly variant sentence just because Puerto Rico has a high crime rate. It has to be tied in to the defendant's personal history characteristics and the offense conduct here. And the offense conduct here, we have a felon, criminal history category 3. So talking about recidivism is a very real issue. We have a firearm and we have guns. And we know that gun violence in Puerto Rico, many published opinions from the circuit to show that it is a special problem. And we know that drug use and drug and guns together in Puerto Rico constitute a large part of the violence on the island. So to say it's irrelevant is not true. To focus on it solely is where the problem comes into play. But that's not what happened in this case, because even the defendant himself, without even taking into consideration any of the community characteristics, is telling the district court a 24-month variance is appropriate. So having the government say, we agree a 24-month variance is appropriate, and we've also taken into consideration this, something that we know comes up frequently, is not taking away with one hand what we're giving with the other. It's telling the judge it's already baked in, it's factored into our recommendation, so that we're fulfilling our duties pursuant to the plea agreement, not doing anything to the contrary. And I just would like to point out how this conduct is vastly different from the 3 main breach cases that are cited throughout. We have Clark, Canada, and I believe it's pronounced Gonski, excuse me if I said that wrong, where we have breaches. And those breaches have been in Clark, where a sentencing memorandum says you cannot oppose acceptance of responsibility, and at the sentencing hearing, the prosecutor did it. So that's giving with one hand, taking away from the other. In Canada, they were supposed to recommend a 30-month sentence. They didn't affirmatively do that. They emphasized a supervisory role. They were begrudging in their sentencing recommendation, lamenting that it did not happen here. We have the sentencing memorandum, we have the objection, and then at the hearing, the government didn't mention any of these community factors. It just, again, talked about the evidence seized and again recommended the 84 months for the firearm and the 16 months for the drugs. And then you have the Gonski case, where they were supposed to recommend a low-end sentence, and there was this zealous advocacy that culminated with giving the defendant his just deserves and at a minimum the guideline sentence when he was supposed to recommend a low-end sentence. Very different a situation if there's a joint recommendation for a low-end sentence and the government continues to talk about aggravating factors, which could be interpreted to call into question what's the government's true motive here. But here's a situation where we have both parties agreeing to a substantial upward variance, so that the government's justification of that is not taking away the benefit it gave with this plea agreement.
Counselman, am I remembering correctly that Mr. Aponte-Colón was originally charged with machine gun?
Yes, Your Honor.
Possession of machine gun in furtherance. Did this turn out not to be a machine gun?
Your Honor, to be honest, I do not have this information at that time. I do know, I looked through the record, and I do know that the machine gun report was provided in discovery. I do not want to say something that I'm not sure of.
Okay. We don't know, we don't know. It seems like a very elementary fact, not to have clearly in this record, and I'll ask the defense counsel as well.
Yes, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, the government rests on its brief and requests this court affirm Mr. Upland's conviction.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please reintroduce herself on the record? She has a 3-minute rebuttal.
Good morning again, Your Honors. Jessica, on behalf of Mr. Holman. I'd like to briefly address the breach in just a quick point, and then I'd like to focus more on the procedural reasonableness. Your Honor, the government talked a lot about including of the photo and things like that, but again, I point to the fact that we don't have to take issue with the photo being presented in this sentencing memorandum. In fact, the defense itself also submitted a photo of the drugs seized in its sentencing memorandum. The issue is the citation of all the murder statistics and the homicides and the violent crime without tying that to Mr. Aponte, and that part of our argument was not addressed by the government in its argument. Additionally, there is no magic rule. The court's been clear about that as far as how a government is supposed to comply with a plea agreement. But what is clear in the circuit's case law is the impartial observer test. And whether anyone knowing this district and the trends here would be looking at this sentencing memorandum and thinking that this wasn't the government, again, as we've argued, inducing the court to go even higher. As to the procedural reasonableness.
Can I ask you to answer my question? Is this a machine gun or not?
Your Honor, I wasn't trial counsel in this case. I do understand that the machine gun report was provided, but I'm not comfortable providing the court. I'm sure not having reviewed it myself. I do know that nowhere in the PSR is it included as a machine gun, and nowhere on the record is it included as a machine gun. Oftentimes, Your Honor, in the case, even if it is a machine gun, that information will be provided in the pre-sentence report, even if the defendant doesn't plead to that charge. Your Honors, as to the procedural reasonableness, I'd really like to bring up two quick points. First, the court has been clear in Flores Nader and recently Andres Correa, the judge doesn't have to justify the variance higher than the party's recommended variance. The judge has to justify his variance from the guidelines. The guidelines here were 70 to 76 months. So this court has been clear that while the judge doesn't have to say exactly why he disagrees with the party's variance, the judge has to indicate why his variance, or give some indication so a reviewing court can understand why his variance was the appropriate sentence in this case. And this record is devoid of that information. I would respectfully turn the court's attention to Munoz-Fontanes, where this court, it's almost an identical sentencing transcript. In fact, I believe Mr. Munoz's facts are quite serious. He had 5 firearms, multiples of which were machine guns, over 800 bullets, photos in his cell phone of dead bodies that corresponded to suspected murders in the area where he was from. And this same district court reviewed those and just read all those facts, and the reviewing court said that while that may be true, the district court did not tie that to why he considered each of those facts to go up. It's an almost identical transcript in Mr. Aponte's case, relisting the items seized without more. And one final point, Your Honor, the government here has asked the court to look at the drug trafficking and all the things that were recovered as the court making some sort of inference that there was more drug trafficking. That is not the record before this court. The court made no statements to that effect, and the government cannot save the district court below by inserting that justification in the record now. So we would respectfully ask the court to vacate the sentence and remand with the specific instructions as included in our briefs. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.